Fighting for our children, we shall not be moved. We're fighting for our children, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved. We shall not be, we shall not be moved. We shall not be, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
Yes, these were the raw materials out of which CIO was built. Was it all worthwhile? Perhaps the answer is to be found in an essay written by a 16-year-old high school boy in Bemis, Tennessee. He had a kind of special reason for knowing.
Organized labor is not just a union you join. It's an organization which you must mingle in, contribute time and valuable thinking to. It's an organization that's not sprung up overnight. It's taken years of painful, hard fighting to get it. Some live so that they could work and contribute their time in organizing many plants, factories, and mills. No matter what kind of union you have, it can't run itself. It must be taken care of. Make preparations for your children and theirs. Build your union as you would build your home.
Build your union as you'd build your home, wrote 16-year-old David Simmons, the son of Lowell Simmons. Lowell Simmons was a local leader of the CIO textile workers. On Christmas Eve, 1951, during a strike at Bemis, Tennessee, he was shot to death by a strikebreaker.
I dreamed I saw Joey last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. Joe Hill ain't dead, he says to me. Joe Hill ain't never died. Where working men are out on strike, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side.
But CIO was not without resources of its own. Ideals, loyalty, sacrifice. There were picket lines and there were sit-downs. And there was knowledge and understanding, too. Mostly, there was solidarity, brotherhood, a feeling of belonging. Oh, and that was fun, too. Sure, CIO could laugh even when things were rough. Many a picket line or union meeting perked up when someone started to sing.
You gals won't be free, take a tip from me. Get you a man who's a union man, then join the ladies' auxiliary. Married life ain't hard when you got a union card. A union man has a happy life when he's got a union wife. You can't scare me, I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die.
You can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. And millions did stick. And CIO unions were built and made strong. And other unions grew, too. In these two brief decades, the ranks of organized labor grew from less than 3 million to more than 18 million. But let the record show that as we grew and became stronger and developed maturity, there was, too, a growing maturity in the ranks of management. Sure, it wasn't an easy road. There have been many bumps on the way. But today, well, let's listen to David J. McDonald reporting to the steelworkers.
At first, our struggle was to gain recognition, and we lost in those early days. With patience, feeling and believing in justice and right, and the full knowledge that our course was sound, we later did gain recognition. After this recognition came growth and strength, and now we have heard the top leaders of the American steel industry say, we not only recognize the United Steelworkers of America, we accept the United Steelworkers of America.
And let the record also show that we haven't been alone. We've had our enemies, sure, but we've had our friends, too. Wherever men of goodwill and democratic conviction were to be found, there you found friends of organized labor. All we asked was the right to organize. Franklin Delano Roosevelt agreed, and so did the Congress, which passed the Wagner Act, and so did the Supreme Court in 1937 when it declared,
"We say that labor organizations come out of the necessities of the situation, that a single employee is helpless in dealing with an employer, that the union is essential to give laborers an opportunity to deal on a basis of equality with their employers. The Wagner Labor Relations Act is constitutional."
And men of religion were found to be speaking out fearlessly for labor. Leaders of every faith identified the aims of organized labor with the basic foundations of religion itself. A priest once told a CIO convention, "I'm glad to be here because I belong here." To the eyes of other men, the Savior appeared as a tradesman, a worker. A rabbi declared, "For me, the labor movement is a spiritual movement in the same sense that the church is, an organization to lift one up above materialistic needs and to give one a vision of what can be." And a minister declared, "I am convinced that the organization of labor is essential to the well-being of the working people. It's based upon a sense of the inestimable value of the individual man."
They tell a story about Van A. Bittner during a strike where the owners had declared open season on union officials. And Van slipped away from the friends who had been assigned to watch for his safety, and he went for a walk. When his friends found him, they were angry with concern and asked, "Don't you know better than to walk out here alone?" And Van answered, "I'm not walking alone. I'm walking with my God."
We will build a new world.
We will build a new world.
We will build a new world.
Sidney Hillman once declared, "There is no welfare without the social welfare. Economic progress, peace, democracy in all its forms, these objectives of society were the objectives of organized labor." CIO has said that what is good for America is good for the CIO. Shortly before he died, Hillman stated with simple eloquence,
"We want a better America, an America that will give its citizens, first of all, a higher and higher standard of living, so that no child will cry for food in the midst of plenty. We want to have an America where the inventions of science will be at the disposal of every American family, not merely for the few who can afford them. An America that will have no sense of insecurity, and which will make it possible for all groups, regardless of race, creed, or color, to live in friendship, to be real neighbors. An America that will carry its great mission of helping other countries to help themselves."
On many fronts, CIO has been working and fighting to create this kind of America, this kind of world. It's provided the training grounds for citizenship. Thousands of men and women who served on political action committees and legislative committees, in community service activities, in union education programs. In turn, their training and dedication has led them to serve faithfully and efficiently on local school boards, Red Cross chapters, community chests. In fact, wherever people are working together for the social good. In the field of civil rights, for example, in 1947, James B. Carey spoke for millions of CIO members and their families when, as a member of President Truman's Committee on Civil Rights, he joined in declaring that,
"We abhor the totalitarian arrogance which makes one man say he will respect another man as his equal only if he has my race, my religion, my political views, my social position. In our land, men are equal, but they are free to be different. From these differences among our people has come the great human and national strength of America.
Yes, it's been well said that the letters CIO really stand for citizenship in operation. And citizenship was really in operation one morning early this year in the nation's capital when five United States senators sat hushed and moved as they listened to the quiet testimony of a shirt worker from South Carolina. Mrs. Rosalie Watkins had come many miles to ask support for a higher minimum wage.
You can't make a living on 75 cents an hour or 90 cents. The present law is real hard on people. It's the children. They're the ones that suffer. If we had a higher minimum, there wouldn't be so many sick children and clinic cases. It would help people help themselves instead of the government or charity helping them.
CIO's political and legislative activities have been directed at labor objectives, of course, for a higher minimum wage, against Taft-Hartley, for improved unemployment insurance, but CIO has never been found wanting in campaigns for the public good, for the elimination of segregation in our public schools, for liberal immigration policy, for the safeguarding of our civil liberties, for aid to farmers, for fair tax laws, for adequate housing and social security and health measures. For CIO believes that there is no welfare without the social welfare.
If each little kid could have fresh milk each day, if each homeless soul had a good place to stay, if each working man had enough time to play, it could be a wonderful world. If we could consider each other a neighbor, a friend, or a brother, it could be a wonderful, wonderful world. It could be a wonderful world.
If we could consider each other a neighbor, a friend, a brother. And CIO recognizes no national boundary lines to brotherhood. It has united with free workers through the ICFTU to create a world of peace and justice, a good world. In its appeal to free labor all over the world, the ICFTU has declared,
together, we can conquer poverty and exploitation and create a world of abundance and security. Together, we can destroy tyranny and oppression and create a world of freedom and human dignity. Together, we can defeat the forces of war and aggression and create a world of peace and justice.
A world of peace and justice. CIO has been privileged to play its part in the creation of such a world. We've come a long way here in America these 20 years. But so much remains to be done. Count the hungry faces then, and count the strong ones now. But remember ones still unfed. Count the ragged children then, and the rosy-cheeked ones now. But remember the millions still in slums. Count the victims of the wars we've seen in our short life, and count the blessings for each day of peace, but remember the fears and doubts still haunting us. Yes, count the millions once yearning for union strength, and count the union members now, but remember the millions still unreached, millions still yearning, still daring to hope. There is indeed much for American labor to do, and it will take more unity and more strength than ever. Remember well the words of Alan Haywood, who until his very last breath kept driving us to build our union strong.
The fact is that the CIO was born in an atmosphere of hunger and poverty. Yes, and desperation. We organized and we went on strike. We challenged the great corporations. And we resisted the nightsticks and the tear gas of our police. Today, trade unions of America have fought their way to acceptance by the corporations and by the government. But keep this in mind. No government, no administration, no group of public officials, no matter how friendly, can hold our gains for us. It is only our unions supported by the solid determination of our members, which can ensure our future.
It's 20 years now since the letters CIO first made an indelible mark upon American history. And those who've been privileged to be associated with this stirring chapter are not content merely to look back upon that chapter with pride. They again turn their eyes to the future, a future of new opportunities, new goals, new dreams.
This is the beginning of what can be the most glorious chapter in the history of the free American labor movement. Let us join hands with the men and women of goodwill in the American Federation of Labor and together face the future with the will, the courage, and the sense of dedication that we have demonstrated in the past. Together with free men everywhere, we can be among the important architects of building that better tomorrow in a better world, a world fashioned in the image of freedom, in the image of justice, in the image of decency, and in the image of human brotherhood.
These were the words of hope and confidence of the president of CIO, the words of Walter B. Reuther, when the historic merger agreement was adopted earlier this year. Hope and confidence that flow from strength, from unity, from solidarity. For years now, millions of men and women have been giving expression to this confidence which solidarity inspires, each in his own way, sometimes hesitant, sometimes eloquent. And they've sung about their hopes, too. Some have sung all the words. When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Some have sung just the last words, words of hope, words of strength, words of brotherhood. They have sung these words sometimes with smiles following victories, sometimes even with tears in defeat. For they knew the union makes them strong.
Solidarity forever.
Melvin, I'd like to thank our good friend Melvin Douglas for a very brilliant performance. I think we've all been inspired. And Joe Glazer.
My big problem was to keep from crying during Joe Glazer's songs.
Well, if you kept from crying, you did better than I did, because I couldn't keep from crying.
The last voice you heard was that of CIO President Walter Reuther, closing the final convention of the Congress of Industrial Organizations.